Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to talk about another article that I found on Apple News.
Yes. Now I know.
Now you know.
Well, now I know it exists.
And knowing is half the battle.
To love you.
This is an article from the website thecut.com, another website that I don't really frequent, but the title caught me, and so I was like, well, we got to talk about this one. And the title is Parents Who Pay to Be Watched.
When you sent this to me, I saw the title and I thought, what could this possibly be about? So I started to read it,
sort of casually,
looking at it. And then I said, wait a minute. So then I started and reread it.
Right.
Make sure I'm getting this right.
I was similar that as I was reading it, when I first started reading it, I was thinking, oh, I know where this is going. This is just people, applied behavior analysts oftentimes are professionals who will go into people's homes and they'll do observations and they'll watch and they'll try to provide or recommend strategies to help change children's behaviors and things like that. But this was, and so I thought it was going there that, okay, we're going to use surveillance cameras to do the same thing so that the person doesn't have to come to the home. It's a little bit more natural, but it did not go in the direction that I was anticipating.
No, I had to read this one twice, and there were a couple parts that I had to read three times not because I didn't understand it, but I wanted to make sure that what I was reading I was getting accurately.
Right.
Because this is a little bit at the edge.
Yeah.
Of what's happening out there,
right,
with child rearing, and I'm trying to weigh my words very carefully here,
right. So we'll tell you why. The reason is, so there this article is about this family's experience with a company that works to help parents, change the behavior of their children, especially if they have really challenging behaviors. And they seek to provide recommendations and monitoring to address issues immediately. That's the
goal. Which is what we teach.
Right.
Okay. So we're okay there. So you want an immediate response to the behavior.
Right. And so they have what their company does is they kind of provides various levels of support. Is that fair?
Okay.
Am I saying it right? I don't want to dance too much.
I'm true.
Okay. So what they'll do is they'll send people to live with you for a few months at a time.
Say that again. They will
send people.
They will come and live in your house.
For months.
For weeks to months.
Right.
To get an idea of your family's rhythms.
Right.
Okay. Many of you have seen the show Super Nanny.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Of this woman who comes into the house and gets your kids under control, right? And she uses a sort of a standard behavioral approach. Mm-hmm. You respond immediately, you decide what the rules are.
Battles to fight, which ones not to fight.
Mm-hmm. And so this is about applied behavior analysis, which is B.F. Skinner's theory done with people in natural settings.
Right.
B.F. Skinner did his work in laboratories.
Okay, primarily with animals.
With animals. I mean, he had highly controlled laboratory experiments. And his students took this out of the laboratory and applied it in real settings, hence the term applied behavior analysis. And there are standard procedures that we use. We shorten it to ABA. So when we're talking about ABA, we're talking about applied behavior analysis. So this article is about a version of applied behavior analysis.
Right. So these folks that will come live with you, they call them the family architects.
What does that tell you? That name says it all.
First of all, I do like that name, though. I'm going to put that on my business cards. I'm a family architect. I build families. So they're and
It refers to them, it says the family architects are the foot soldiers of the company. So these folks go out and, again, they live in the home for weeks to months, mm-hmm. and work to get into the rhythm of the family. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, the goal is to just become a natural part of the family so that
right.
the family's behavior is normal when they're there,
right.
so they can see some of the
because
behaviors.
It's not initially. They're,
right.
they're treated like guests or like strangers, and so everybody's kind of either very suspicious or we're on our best behavior.
Right.
But eventually, we get used to their presence, and we revert back to this is how we normally act.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, keep going.
So that's one part. The next part, and maybe a more challenging part, is that they have these things called nest cams. And what they will do is they will come to your home and they will install camcorders or cameras in the home, surveillance cameras in the home, in all the different rooms of the home, so that they can 24/7 monitor the family.
So each room of your house is being monitored 24 hours a day, and it's
right.
being sent to their screens,
right.
wherever they are. Back to family architects for a moment. One of the principles involved in their approach is you don't change one child,
right.
you have to change the family.
Right.
Okay. And we sort of agree with that.
Sure.
That, you know, in this particular case, they had one of their children
mm-hmm.
that they were particularly concerned about. And the parents wanted somebody to work on his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But the family architect said, we have to change the house.
Right.
You have to. The whole family has to change if we're going to get this boy under control.
Right.
Okay. So, hence the term family architect. But continue, because this is fascinating.
It is. So we have the family architects. We have the nest cams,
mm-hmm.
and so the family is then provided with immediate. Frequent feedback from the people who are monitoring through the cams.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Through the webcams.
So you have a way to see things happening immediately.
Right.
So people aren't coming into the office a week after the event and talking about it.
Right.
We're looking at it in real time.
Right. Now, so far, I think that everything that we've talked about in an idealized way sounds okay. I think that I mean, not that I want to have cameras in people's houses and monitor all that, because I don't know what that says about me if I wanted to have cameras in somebody's houses.
There are words for this.
To voyeur? Is that what it's called? But the idea of being able to provide that immediate feedback and immediate, that's great.
It would be helpful. I mean,
right.
I have to say that as I was reading this, I thought, man, that would be great, because then you could actually see the interaction. How did this problem start?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and tone of voice,
mm-hmm.
and you know, was somebody angry? Were they aroused when they went into the situation?
Right.
So it'd be really, really helpful to
right.
have these cameras.
Right.
However,
you start the however.
However,
you start the however.
They set up. One of the things the architects do is they begin by setting up new rules in the
right.
house. Okay, so they're not only doing an analysis of what might be wrong, but they're also saying, this is unacceptable. These things that we're observing are unacceptable.
Right.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to establish what the rules are in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that should have been done anyway.
Right.
Okay, it shouldn't take a group of experts
right.
to come in and say, but I wouldn't mind somebody doing that in my house. Say, hey,
sure.
you're making some mistakes here.
Yeah.
You know, you, and that's one of the points of this, is that you think you're doing, parents think they're doing it correctly, but to an outside observer, an objective observer might come in and say, no, you
right.
waited way too long to intervene.
Right.
Or you're not being consistent with this. You know, you set up a rule, but you're not being consistent.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, in that regard, this is a valuable service
right.
because these people are telling you, you're making some mistakes here.
Right.
It's like having a parenting coach.
Yeah.
You know, said, you know, everything's good here, but you're doing this, this, and this incorrectly.
Right. And along those lines, in the article, they say that the owner of the company refers to this more as educational than therapeutic.
Right. Right.
We're just giving information.
We're teaching.
We're teaching.
That's right. Yeah. We're refining the skills that you already
right.
have.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. But there's a few other concerns, though, with this. The first thing, and I'm just going to go for the big one right off at the top. This is an expensive process.
You have to charge for your time.
Right.
Nobody has any problem with that.
Right.
The problem with this is we're talking about large amounts of time.
Well, 24 hours a day.
Somebody's monitoring this 24 hours a day. Somebody's watching these screens. There mm-hmm. are people sitting in rooms, dark rooms somewhere,
right.
watching these screens. You right. have to pay that person.
You mentioned, you say dark rooms, making it seem very...
Well, I'm imagining it's like monitoring a building. You know, you have guys sitting in rooms with 12 screens.
How many people could be? They be evaluating at the same time?
If you have a 12-room house, mm-hmm. you have a screen for each room.
Yeah.
Or
at least a screen.
And then that's one family.
Mm-hmm.
How many families are you working with at one time?
Right.
And is it in separate rooms or separate screens? Or I mean, just the technology here
mm-hmm.
is alarming.
Right. So,
but you have people watching the screens all the time.
Right. So this one family that's mentioned in the article says that within 5 weeks of being part of this program, the estimated cost was about $70,000.
$70,000,
right.
$70,000. So, in 5 weeks.
So,
five weeks.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Even if it was $50,000.
Yeah.
It's $10,000 a week.
Yeah. In another family, this is where you said 80,000. This was another family. It says one family I spoke to. I'm reading from the article. One family I spoke to used the service for 4 months and paid roughly $125 per hour for a family architect to work with them between 40 and 50 hours a week, adding up to roughly $80,000 for that 4 week, 4 month. I'm sorry, period. Then in the 5 weeks that this other person did, with the company's two family architects, she estimated that she spent around $70,000.
We are speechless.
The challenge is that, you know, and it's not that, because as you said, people should, you know, you have to pay for the time that people are spending and things like that.
Right.
But we're talking here, I think that the concern that I have is just the excessiveness. Do you have to monitor 24 hours a day? Do you have to monitor every room of the house? Do you have to, you know, do you have to live with the family for months at a time? I think that because there are aspects of this that could be really good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
This is the reason this article is of interest. Is this is parenting in the age of fear.
Right.
This is parenting driven by fear.
Right.
And parenting is a challenge.
Yeah.
But it is not beyond our capacity. Mm-hmm. My grandmother, who never went to school, was a pretty good parent.
Yeah.
That doesn't take an advanced degree.
Right.
Okay. But this is parenting in the age of fear. This is driven by the same motivation that causes parents to spend tens of thousands of dollars to get their children into the right preschool
mm-hmm.
so they can go to the right elementary school. If you're living in a large city
mm-hmm.
and you're competing for a limited number of spaces at these high prestige schools, parents are spending tens of thousands of dollars
right.
on preschool, on lessons, on coaches, on private schools, elite academies, high-end SAT and ACT preparation courses.
Mm-hmm.
There seem to be among a segment of the population, there seems to be this desire, this obsession with getting your kids ready to compete with other kids. And parents are spending enormous amounts of money to get their children so that their children can compete for a limited number of elite positions.
Right.
And this is simply a part of that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, the issue or the other issue or the other concern is that because we have this, because of the culture in which we're developing educationally, culturally, societally, we're creating these two paths. We have this, and it's so fascinating. You know, one of the lines in this was that one of the families was talking with one of the family architects, and said, you know, for the amount of money that they're spending, they could have hired 5 nannies. And then that the next line just, you know, it just makes your brain melt a little bit. She says, I told our consultant, this is a billionaire game, not a millionaire, game.
That's right. I love that line.
And it's just, so what we're saying is that, you know, to get your kids prepared for some of these opportunities that you were just talking about, you have to have the financial means to go above and beyond what anybody, you know, what the vast, vast, vast majority of the population is able to do.
Right. There are these elite private schools, and they're very good. They do a very good job, that will cost you $50,000 or $60,000 a year. That's what the tuition would cost to go to high school.
Right.
$50,000 or $60,000 a year. That doesn't include the money that you spent preparing your child to compete for one of those slots.
Right.
Okay. But what we're doing, you and I talk a lot about the two-tiered school system of the haves and the have-nots. I guess this is important to some parents. In fairness, these people are spending $70,000 or $80,000 for this. They obviously can afford it.
Right.
The author of this article says, I'm really doing the same thing at a little bit lower level.
Right.
I'm not spending $80,000, but I might be spending $8,000
right.
for my daughter's cheerleading uniforms, dance lessons, coaches, and all the rest that, you know, hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. Look at these kids who play year-round sports, you know, where their families have to spend weekends in hotels.
Right.
Those weekends can cost hundreds of dollars.
Right.
If you do it 10 or 12 times, you're spending thousands of dollars
right.
so your child can play baseball. Yeah. And for most families, they're sacrificing something else to provide their children with these advantages to play elite sports or to get into elite schools. But it's parenting driven by fear. And that's the part that worries me, is that we're taking very young children and we're pushing them really, really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And many kids burn out. You talk to these baseball players who've been playing this kind of baseball for 10 years, from age 8 to age 18. They can't wait to graduate from high school so they never have to look at another baseball because they've been pushed so hard for so long. So the downside of this is that we're really putting the pressure on the kids. Mm-hmm. And what's the payoff for the kid?
Right.
What's the pay? I know what the payoff for the parent is. You get bragging rights.
Right.
What's the payoff for the child?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
it's it's a fascinating example of the extent to which some parents will go, and you know, there's not a whole lot to say about the article that the article itself doesn't say. It's a long piece.
Yeah, it's pretty long.
So you know. But you definitely should read this if you're interested in sort of the extent to which some families will go to I don't even know what, to prepare to you know, sort of have this idealized family, this idealized situation that they think that they should have.
You know, I think we all know people, we all have friends who will say, I want my kids to be the best. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're not saying, I want my kids to be the best they can be. Mm-hmm. They're saying, I want my kids to be the best. I want them to be seen as the best. And I'm going to do, and I'm going to make them do whatever they have to do to get there. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ride them, and I'm going to be on their backs. Mm-hmm. I'll pay for everything. I'll give them all these advantages, but I expect them to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to to step back and take a look at that. In this day and age of magnet schools and charter schools and elite sports academies and things, what are we doing to kids? Right. What is the other side of that coin? I understand the parents want their kids to be successful. Mm-hmm. But when we push the way we're pushing, and we're pushing them for fear that they might not make it.
Right.
You know, we're afraid that if we don't do these things, our children might get left behind.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is doing it. All the other parents are doing it. So I have to do it. What are we doing to our children in the process?
Right.
You know, are we creating better scholars, students, doctors, citizens?
Right.
And I think this article gave me pause. And I'm not highly critical of it. I mean, the principles that they use are the principles that we mm-hmm. typically teach. But there's an element of this that's that I find disturbing about what we're doing to children.
Right. And I think that something to, you know, as we're wrapping up this podcast and we're talking about this, you know, parents think that this is what they have to do to have a kid that's successful and that can, mm-hmm. you know, really stand apart from others. And meanwhile, we were just talking the other day about, not last school year, but the school year before, there was a big story here in our local area mm-hmm. Where a kid graduated from high school.
Yes.
And was accepted to two of the three Ivy League schools that he applied to. I think it was Yale, Harvard, and Princeton, I think, were the two mm-hmm. that he applied to. And he chose Harvard. My memory is he chose Harvard. I tried to find the article, but I can't find it. He came from a migrant farm working family.
Right.
He did not have something like this. He did not have any of these, you know, massively...
He didn't play year-round sports. He didn't have any of the... He didn't get private mm-hmm. coaches. He didn't get private lessons.
Right. So, you know, the path is there, whether through this, something like this, or something, you know, just doing the work that it takes to be the parent and for the kid to have the interest and the drive and the motivation to you know, meet those goals. And of course, you know, certainly the innate ability to do that stuff. It's possible without all of this other stuff. And we don't hear about, I don't think we hear about those kinds of, we don't hear about those kinds of stories often enough. Mm-hmm. And we hear about these kinds of things that are, you know, if you really want your kid to be, it reminds me of another article I read a few months ago, where the guy was talking about, you know, if you want to get your kids into medical school, this is what you need to do. And it's, you know, it was kind of crazy stuff. Well, all you got to do is donate $100,000 to the medical school, and then they will, you know, almost guarantee that your child will be accepted, as long as he has test scores and everything. But, you know, there's much more to these opportunities than that.
You know, as I think about this, I don't fault any parent, because I think the parents probably do. I think most parents probably work pretty hard at parent.
Absolutely.
I think they do. I think we have to invest. I think we have to step back every once in a while and examine our motives. You know, mm-hmm. what are you trying to create, and why are you doing it?
Right.
Are you doing it just to keep up with everybody else?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good thing to do for your kids. That's not a good way to treat your children.
Right.
You know, everybody else is doing it, so I'm going to do it.
Right.
You have to be the best.
Right.
That's a lot to put on a kid.
That's a lot of pressure.
And a lot of kids can't take that kind of... Some thrive. Some will thrive on it. You know, some kids love to be pushed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you always have to be thinking. We talk about mindfulness mm-hmm, in our field. Mm-hmm. You have to be thinking about what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Right.
And what do you want your children to be like, not when they're 14, but when they're 24
mm-hmm.
or 34 mm-hmm. or 44? What kind of people do you want them to be when they're 40?
Absolutely.
Because you're shaping that now. So think every once in a while, step back and ask yourself what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Right. The why part is really important.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's it, right? Read the links in the show notes.
It will give you pause.
It will.
I mean, it'll make you think about your parenting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, so that's it. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.